Wait a minute. Strength of principle. Strength of heart. Strength in holding a position until it serves you to bend for the higher purpose. I've seen you be strong and sometimes what I thought was stubborn until you said, no, I got to give that up. And in a second, you give it up. So it's a strength of character that is, you have absolutely been an inspiration to me in your strength. It's why my heart is so often moved to serve this organization and you specifically. For me, you are strength and you are needed at this time. So honor you in your offering to all of us. And so I think sometimes across the country we feel a little distant from what's happening, and we are, we're spread out everywhere. But trust me when I tell you, this gentleman, who said last night that the chamber, Bob Dean said the chamber, the heart has two sides? Four chambers, we know. Dr. Kathy Hearn is one side of that heart. Dr. Ken is the other side of that heart, and they beat rhythmically with such beauty. Truly an inspiration, and I'm so glad that you are in the leadership during my time of being in this organization. Please welcome Dr. Ken Gordon.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Holy cow. Do you have any idea what it's like to come in here from the West Coast last night at, 9:30 at night when Steve brought me in and walk in and all this energy's here? And what an incredible spiritual community this is. And I'm so honored to have been asked to come and speak with you. And so since I walked in the door last night at 9:30, I've been attempting to catch up with you energetically, which is... I'm a little ways behind yet, but I'm running as fast as I can to get there. Just spectacular. And so far this morning, before I've even stood up here, I've heard my talk given about six times, which is just, it's tremendous. And I mean that really because it's something that is occurring for us, each of us, whether we know it or not. It's happening right now. How many people here were born into this teaching? That's what I thought. Right. Seth, right. I knew that too. I know. How many people here think that there's a calling that they have in their life that they're either seeking or they found? Yeah, that's getting up there, all right. And so, how many people think that there's a reason for us to be here in this place and space at this time? Right. So, I'm sure you've all heard about the incredible experience that we got to have with some sense of completion in San Diego when we integrated United and International Centers for Spiritual Living and actually came together as one, which was really, it was the obvious thing to do, and it only took us 57 years to get there, which, unlike the youth, which apparently woke up one morning and said, we are one. We don't understand what's going on here. And when Stephanie was sharing about how they're really out there in the world and they don't even hide it at all, how accurate and how true that is. And so, what I really want to talk about today is I want to talk about us being like that. I want to talk about how essential it is that we wake up to that reality and that we start moving out into the world with this. This teaching... for me, and I have a background in political science and philosophy, so I know a little bit. I spent 15 years in a traditional church, which I loved and honor and still do. So I've had some experience throughout the years, but as I found this teaching and entered into it in a very cynical mode and began to analyze it and break it down to figure out what works and what doesn't work in science of mind, and less in science of mind than in truth teaching period, and what we call new thought. I'm really not too hung up on the names or the titles of the organizations. I'm really hung up on the movement. which really is this movement to awaken the world. And it seems that our calling is drawing us to that, that we're beginning to move forward into that idea and that ideal, that maybe perhaps there's something bigger in this teaching than what we're experiencing on the individual level. You know, this teaching, when I came into it, was all about the individual. And the old-timers would always say, you know, it all begins within you, and you just, you know, you change your mind and the world's going to transform and change around you. And I always missed that part where the connection came in. I can certainly change my immediate surroundings, without a doubt, and so can you, and so do we all the time. But I don't necessarily change the world or transform the world through that idea. So with integration, when we came together, the bigger vision behind it really was to come together to demonstrate and show the unity of the truth of who we are, so that what we can do is we can have a larger collective consciousness to move forward and to take the message out into the world. And I can remember Dr. John and I actually, I think we were probably some of the very, very first. I spoke in 2005 at the United Asilomar experience, as a matter of fact. And there I had the opportunity, and already I'd had this idea that was put inside me. And it wasn't put inside me by me. It was put inside me by the observation of what was happening around me. It really was the grassroots, the movement itself that stood up and said, you know what, we have to start practicing what we preach, and we have to start unifying, and we have to start sharing that with the world if we plan on getting anywhere. And so I listened to that, and it made sense. And it was like Reverend Michelle said, is that I had one mindset, and I changed my mind instantaneously because it seemed to be the way that it was going. So I spoke in 2005 at the United Asilomar, and when I spoke in 2005 at the United Asilomar, this guy who I didn't know very well, who I'd met once before, came up from the back, and I spoke about integration, although at that time it was called unification or reunification. And when I did, John came up to me and he said, you know what, I'm going to hold you to that. And I said, don't hold me to it. You hold yourself to it. You're the one who's going to have to do this. And so I'm here to tell you that whatever you're thinking about what's possible and potential for the world, don't hold Reverend Michelle or me to that. Hold yourself to that. This is what we need to do to transform and make this different. You know, this teaching is the greatest teaching I've found up to now. To demonstrate and to be able to show a way to be able to truly create a world that works for everyone, which is the largest vision that I can think of. Reverend Michelle said, hold on to your vision, don't give up no matter what, no matter what's coming up at you, no matter what other people think or what other people hold to be true, to be able to stand steadfast to your own bliss, to your own calling, to your own knowledge and your own knowing, that is the key and that is the answer to life. And it's absolutely true. So when I say how many people here have a calling, I ask you to ask yourself, what is that calling? What is the bigger picture behind it? I once gave a story about a recognition or an observation that I made where I was standing in my backyard and I was wondering what I was going to talk about, actually. And I have a rather fractured mind when it comes to certain things. So I'd sit and I'll be thinking about one thing and all of a sudden something shiny will happen over here and I'll immediately turn to the shiny object and start looking at it. So I was deeply thinking about what I was going to talk about without a clue as to where it was going to go. And so have you ever been there where you're thinking about something, you don't know what you're thinking about, but you're trying to figure out what it is that you're thinking about so that you can actually get a grasp on it? And it never seems to come. So I'm sitting there doing that, and all of a sudden, a couple of bees fly by, and immediately my attention went from what I was looking at to the bees flying by. And I looked at the bees, and I thought, bees, yeah, in my backyard with my grandchildren and stuff, you know, I'm probably going to have to find out where they are and get rid of them. I'm going to have to move them from this place. And the minute that I thought that, I thought, you know, whoa, wait a second, what is this? And the bees that were there, you know, I got thinking about it, is that if I went and found their nest, to move their nest, that what would happen is when I went to do it and began to shift it around or move it, what they would do is they would attack me and sting me. And the reason they'd attack me and sting me is because their belief is that their job in life would be to sustain the nest. It would keep the nest whole, protect the queen at all costs. And then I began thinking, that's that way that one works, but I know bees for something else, and that is that they produce this lovely stuff called honey. So, they think their job is to sustain the nest. I believe their job is to create a product called honey. But, then I got thinking even deeper on the other layer of vision. First one being sustenance, the second one being productivity, the third one being the essence of what it is all about. And actually, the bee's job, they say without bees, that nothing on earth would grow. That the bee's job is to pollinate, it's to keep things alive, it's to spread that around. And so the discovery that I had was that our job in life isn't to sustain, and our job in life isn't even to create product. Our job in life is to pollinate the world. It's to get out there and move and share that being that we are. And to a large degree, what I find in myself, and I'll speak for myself, not for you, because I'm sure there's some avatars here after last night. But what I found was that a lot of my life is spent trying to sustain something. Trying to keep something alive, trying to protect something. Most of it looks like my life itself or my belief system or what I'm doing or how I'm doing it. Most of it looks like me trying to make sure that my life stays on the same pathway so that I can continue to be comfortable. That my life stay on the same pathway so I can continue to be loved. My life stay on the same pathway so I can continue to have money come into my life to support me. My life stay on the same pathway so that I can continue to be physically energetic and healthy. And I spend an incredible amount of my life sustaining that belief. And on the outer picture, I spend an incredible amount of my life sustaining an organization. I'm a senior minister and my center in Kelowna, British Columbia, is a beautiful center, and I spend a lot of time trying to sustain the organization, and anything that comes near it to threaten it, I'm apt to sting it when it comes forward. Even though I think what I'm doing is producing awakened humanity, which is really the calling, but really the bigger one is I'm pollinating life. And when I can let go of the two smaller ones, what I can suddenly do is I can find the essence of that call. There's a reason why we're all here. There's a reason why we've shown up here at this time and this date to hear this talk, listen to this beautiful music, to participate in this service, to have this sense, to come to this conference. There's a reason why all this happened, and that reason isn't by accident. It isn't, oops, there it is. Look what I stumbled into. Look how I got here. What that reason is that we're being drawn, we're being pulled, we're being attracted to that bigger ideal, and we all resonate with it, and we all know it. And what I'm here to tell you is that up until this point, this is the greatest teaching that I have ever discovered. And within it lies the potential to transform the world and create the world into the Eden it was meant to be. Or for that matter, the Eden that it is. But the challenge is that I spend so much trying to sustain my own little fiefdom that often what happens is I don't get to reach outside and understand that there is a bigger beating of a heart that exists there than I could ever reach within the confines of my own small mind. Through my spiritual practice, I recognize and I see it. Through my linear mind, I understand possibly how it could get there, but I cannot possibly embrace the concept that divinity, that which is infinite, that which keeps everything in order, that which is moving trillions and trillions and trillions of particles of material and mass in this room alone, I can't possibly imagine how that operates and how that moves. And yet, we're sitting here and we're all here for a common purpose with a common idea and a common ideal. And the vision that began with the idea of integration, and I promised I would not talk, I promised myself that I'm done with integration. And I mean it, because for 5, 6, 7, 8 years, that's like every place I've gone. This is a beautiful Frank Lloyd Wright, isn't it? Every place I've gone, I've stood there and I have said, you know, we have to integrate because. And it's time that we get the bigger vision, that we take the next step, because we're there right now. That's done. That's yesterday's news. What are we going to do today with this teaching? How are we going to move this teaching out into the world? I'll tell you something, that this world is exactly what Dr. Holmes said it was. Perfect, whole, and complete. And that it contains within it everything that is required and everything that is necessary in order for peace to reign, in order for everyone to have enough food, in order for everyone to have enough water, in order for everyone to be educated, in order for everyone to have the medical attention and care if they so need it and given to them. Technology is a shared thing. And I find myself in this awakening to this ideal and this idea and recognizing and knowing that it is contained within the things that we teach, the ideals that we hold to be true, the idea that there is only one, the idea that life has huge value and great value, and the tools that we put out into the world, visioning, spiritual mind treatment / affirmative prayer, the ability to be able to control our destiny through the direction of our own mind by taking personal responsibility for who we are, and for our actions and what happens in the world. And the ability to be able to transform the world in that manner, in that way, through the creative process that we all know so well. And so I look at this and I say, you know, if the whole world knew this, if the whole world were to take this action, if we were to do it not only on an individual basis, but if we were to do it on a societal basis and begin to live the world according to the tenets that we espouse in New Thought, not in Science of Mind, in New Thought, if we were to be able to begin to move forward with that truth and share that truth to the world and begin to live from it, what actually would happen? Dr. Holmes said, give me 1,000 people who actually live this teaching and I'll transform the world. And I think he's absolutely right. And he also said that this was the religion of the 21st century, which is also right. He also said, but it probably won't be called that. Why? Because he knew it was a movement. It's not one or two people or organizations that are addicted to sustaining themselves that's going to move this and bring this into the world. What it is it's the awakening within our heart and the coming together to be able to share unconditionally with each other, because we have a larger idea than the idea that we think we have right now, which is all about me. To be able to move forward from that concept that says, you know, I, myself, am a small particle compared to what is actually happening in the world. And if for once I would be able to surrender myself and rise above the fear that somehow or other something might threaten me, and actually live in the principles that I espouse instead of trying to protect myself from something, then the end result is that everything's going to come together and work. Because that's what we need, that's what's required in our world today, is the awakening within the individual to be able to understand that they play a part in the larger whole, and to know that that part is bigger than any little slight that they might have in their life, any little byproduct. You know, I don't like George, he doesn't look nice at me. Or you know, did you hear what she said about me? Etc., etc., etc. So that we jump in there with all of our protective urgency to protect and sustain something, and we forget the ideal that within this very room lies the consciousness that can transform the world, that can see everyone fed, that can see us living in heaven on earth, that state of mind of heaven on earth. We're short of nothing, absolutely nothing. If you're thinking right now, well, I don't know about whether or not that's true, I guarantee you there's nothing. There's more than enough food in this world. Our technology will allow us to be able to produce as much water or as much anything as is needed or required. We have all of the resources, we have all of the technology that is necessary and required in order to bring everyone into a peaceful, harmonious world. Just talk amongst yourself. And this is the truth. I was a California farmer for 12 years. And in that time, I farmed just about everything you can imagine. And I will tell you something. As I used to watch, and I shared this at the World Parliament of Religions a couple of years ago, I used to watch these farmers, the big corporate farmers, come in, and they would have 640 acres of land in Southern California, and they would grow, I don't know, name your vegetable, but they would grow it, and it would come up out of the ground, pardon me, and the day before it was due to be harvested, what they would do is they would check the price sheets. And if the price sheet showed that it was less than what they could get for it, which it often was, what they would do is they would put the tractors and the four-bottom plows into the field and they would plow it under, all of it. Now, they would just turn it over and within a week, there'd be a new crop growing there because it's an economic thing. It's an economic thing. I'll give you an idea how much 640 acres of anything will produce in case any farmers here. Good, good. Thoreau said that all farmers are mystics. And but here's, I grew 10 acres of onions once, and I created in a 3-month period of time 10,100 pound sacks of onions. I figured out at that time that was enough onions to supply the province of British Columbia with onions for 3 months. In one 10-acre field. We can produce incredible food products. So I go to these corporate farmers who I knew quite well, and I'd say, you know, instead of plowing it under, why don't you give it away? And they said, can't do that. I said, well, why can't you do that? I said, well, if we were to give it away, then the price would fall totally out from underneath it, and we could never grow anything more, and even we wouldn't be eating at that particular time. Well, it made sense to me. So I said, so why don't you ship it overseas? He said, can't do that. Costs too much money to put it on a ship, and there isn't enough ships to ship overseas, so we can't possibly do that. I thought, that makes sense. So I guess the world starves, not because there isn't enough food, but because there isn't enough money to distribute it and to send it around the world. So then the next thing that happened to me was when I moved to Kelowna, I have a friend who has a water company. And when I say a water company, he's an inventor. And he actually showed me, he has an invention of this machine that he created that runs on solar power that draws moisture from the air and can create potable water for a family of four in the middle of the Sahara Desert, without any power requirements, by simply using the machine. I think, well, that's a remarkable thing. That's really something great. I invested in it. I thought this was a good thing, without a doubt. I said, well, you know what? So why don't we send that all over the world and everybody will have water? Well, we can't do that. There isn't enough money. We can't possibly do that. Okay. And then I read about Southern California and the water shortages that are coming up there, and I recognize and know that you can build desalinization plants and take the water from the ocean, take the salt out of it. So it's more than capable for us to have that, and so why don't we do that? And the answer is, there isn't enough money. Okay. That's interesting. So the problem in our world today isn't a shortage of food. And the problem in our world isn't a shortage of water. The problem is a shortage of money. Right? Makes sense? So the problem, and when you think about it, you know, there's enough teachers in this room alone. There's, you know, the problem isn't education. The problem is money to pay teachers. The problem isn't the medical care that we have. It's the money to create the drugs and to put the doctors and nurses into place. The problem isn't that technology problem. The problem is money. So this is very interesting for me. So for several years, like a decade, I thought, you know, well, the problem is money. It's that simple. It's not anything else. So I have no trouble believing Ernest Holmes when he says that the universe is abundant and that there's more than enough at all times for everyone to reach out and have at any given time. And I realized that the problem is money. And then we have a couple of wars and a financial meltdown. And I think the tally that I read yesterday in a book that I'm reading is $15 trillion spent. $15 trillion. I'll tell you, you know how much $1 trillion is? $1 trillion will bring 6.5 billion people to this town to participate in this conference, all inclusive with all the food covered, plus their hotel rooms for a week. That's every person, man, woman, and child on this planet. And I begin to do the extrapolation of it, and it occurs to me that the problem isn't money either. So the problem isn't food, the problem isn't water, and the problem isn't money. So what's the problem? Well, consciousness is sum total of our belief. That's probably some accuracy to it. I got another thought behind it, though, and that is that the problem is the will and the willingness and the desire and the intention to do it. We don't have that. It's not just us in this room. We probably do have it, but the world doesn't have it. We don't believe in its possibility. We don't believe that it can be done. And, you know, every time we come forward with an idea, and you watch, because they come forward all the time. Every time an idea comes forward to transform the world, to make it a better place, there's pundits that come back out of the woodwork, and what do they say? They say, we can't do that. That's too fearful for us. We have to sustain our nest, our hive. If we did that, we couldn't sustain our hive anymore. We can't just give that stuff away. We have to protect this system that we're part of. Remember, I had a degree in political science. We have to protect all this stuff. This is all something that we need to do here. And you know, that's just not true. The truth is that this teaching has the ability to be able to transform the world if we have the willingness to understand that it needs to get out to the world. And it's not enough as individuals to integrate or to come together or unify. It's not even enough to hold it as our individualistic belief. What we need to do is we need to become, what was the word you used? We need to become zealous to take it out to the world. We need to take it out there and let the world know that this isn't about us. It isn't about one person. We've been stigmatized. We've been stigmatized by this. You know, there are people who still believe that this is an individual study, that this is about the individual. This is like a religious organization that operates on a self-help action. And this is not the truth, and it is not what Dr. Ernest Holmes put forward. It's not what Emmett Fox talked about. It's not what any of the great leaders of New Thought talked about. They talked about transforming the world through changing your mind. Not just transforming your world, but transforming the world. The solution for this world exists within the teaching that we have because it is free of the constraints of fear because it does not believe in fear. It believes that fear is an error. And so we have the ability to be able to transform if we have the ability to be able to be zealous enough to reach out and touch the rest of the world and let them understand that this transformation takes place now and that there is no excuse not to do it. There is no excuse for people to die because of violence. We know violence doesn't work. Have you noticed we've been using it for 5, 10, 15,000 years and that we still have it? I believe that there was a thing called the war to end all wars. Well, that's ludicrous. And yet we still use it again. I heard a politician once say that the world was faced with a whole set of brand new problems and that we're going to solve them with the same solutions we've always used. I didn't vote for him. He didn't get elected. I mean, you know, that's ludicrous. What we need to do is we need to step into a new idea. And with this, we say, change your mind and change your life. Understand that when we're talking about consciousness, we're talking about individual consciousness. This is an important aspect of our teaching. But we're also talking about community consciousness. You know, lighting the candles. The community finds peace through this, the world finds peace through this spiritual community. And then there's the other one. There's the state consciousness or the larger community consciousness. There's the national consciousness. There's an international consciousness. There's a Western consciousness, an Eastern consciousness, a Northern consciousness, regional consciousness. And we're part of whatever one we sit in the middle of. And you know, we can no longer afford to divorce ourselves from that idea and that concept, which is what we do, which is why we're not zealous. We sit back, we're so smug that we know this truth. We're so smug. We sit back and we pretend like it isn't something that should be shared for a greater purpose and that it's enough just to transform mine, to make me more money, make me healthier, make me more loved. And the truth is that existing within that seed is the truth for everything. And so I'm not going to talk about the vision of integration anymore. And now it's time to step it up. It's time to take it out into the world and say this. It's my belief that we have to change the stigma that we have in the world. And the stigma is that we're self-help about the individual. We're not. What we are is we are the religion of the 21st century. We are the philosophy that can transform and create heaven on earth right here and right now. And it is so possible and so potential. And you know what? People say the same thing as when they said to us when we were doing integration. Never happen. A few more people have to die. That's what they said. They had lots of reasons why this could never happen. And they just kind of slowly over a decade got smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And that's the same thing that we could choose to do with the world. We could choose to step out there. How many people here have friends that don't know what the hell you're doing on Sunday morning? Relatives, too. My sister keeps telling people that I'm a Scientologist. I mean, jeez. Yeah, that's what I say. You know, one of the reasons they don't know what we're doing is because we're not telling them. You know, because we don't believe in sin, but proselytizing is one of them. Isn't that true? I mean, you know, we really don't go out and tell you, you know, you don't knock, knock, knock on your door, open it up and say, "Hi, my name's Dr. Ken Gordon. I've got a creative thought I'd like you to have." That doesn't happen. So, you know, and I'm not expecting that it will, nor do I want you to start doing that. Use your own name. But we have to get our footing somehow to get going and get moving on this stuff. And of course, we believe in the consciousness. So here's what we need first and foremost to do, and we know this to be the truth. We must know that this is true, that this is the philosophy that transforms the world. Well, we know it. Okay. Yes. All right. Now, once we know that, then we have to ask ourselves the question is, if that's so, then why am I not doing something with it? If you had the ability to end hunger, why wouldn't you do it? Well, you do have the ability to end hunger. And so do I. And so why am I not doing it? And the answer is, I am doing it to the best of my ability, but I'm still so shy. I'm still not proselytizing. I'm still not trying to sell this product out in the world. I'm expecting people to get it from the very being of my consciousness, which is a good idea, and it's a good thing, and it works for me as an individual, but there are about 5 billion people in the world that it isn't working so well for. I speak all over the place, and it's nice to see this place packed. It's beautiful. But how come we're not at the local arena or whatever you have here? You know, if we have the answer to the world, well, why isn't there 100,000 people here? You know, think about that for a second. We were born out of the mystery schools. I don't know if you know that or not, but we were born out of the mystery schools. Even in the 50s and 60s in Los Angeles, people would cover their Science of Mind text. And you could, Unity, I'm sure, was the same, and Unitarian and everything else. But they would cover their Science of Mind text with brown paper wrappers so nobody would know what they were reading when they were going through it. It's true, they did. We were born out of the mystery schools, and therefore we have our own consciousness. And our consciousness is that we're still kind of hiding stuff a little bit. We're like Masons or Rosicrucians or Knights Templar, you know. We're, oh, yeah, yeah. Come to my place, we have ritual. You know, But this is what we do. This is where we come from. And it's time that we as a movement adjusted our consciousness in that area. And to do that, what's required is for us to truly open ourselves to what we believe. And if we don't believe it, and I'm no offense meant, if we don't believe it, then what are you doing here? Go find one that you do believe. And then do that one. But if you believe this one, if you believe the tenets as put forward, I'm not talking about everything. Nobody believes everything Holmes said. But if you believe in the part that you do, then why aren't you out there using it and selling it and moving it and speaking for it and standing up for it, standing in the midst of the crises that arises when you stand in the middle of your family and say, you know what? I don't believe that. That's not true. That's just fear speaking. That's just fear. And then when you can stand up and do that with everybody around you, suddenly what's going to happen is you're going to become public with it. Oh my God, public. You're a closet religious scientist, a closet new thoughter coming out into the open. But you're going to become public with it. When you do that, what people are going to say is they're going to say, I always wondered what made her so attractive. I always wondered what it was. Now I know. That's that belief that can transform the world. What a gift we have to give to the world. What a powerhouse we are. And believe me, I've thought about this. I do not want to be the harbinger or the carrier or the water boy for this particular thing. I try to avoid work, not get it. But yet, there it is. There it is in front of me. And it just shows up by being who I am. And I'm as shy as the next person, you know. Yep, I sit on an airplane, I fly, and somebody will come sit down next to me. And, you know, let's say a good Anglican will sit down next to me. Let's make it an Anglican priest. And I know his name, too. Anyway, he sits down next to me, you know, and you're flying along. And he says, so what do you do? I say, if I feel talkative, if I don't, I might say, sell insurance. But if I feel open and receptive and talkative, I'll say, why, I'm a spiritual leader. Oh, and what do you lead? People. I'd say, oh, and what's your philosophy and your belief? I'll say, or what's your denomination? I'll say, I'm a religious scientist. And they'll say, oh, really? And what do you believe? And it occurs to me that at this point, I have half an hour to tell them what I believe. That's a challenge, don't you think? Yeah. I would never sit down next to that same Anglican and sit there and we're in the plane and we're flying and say, well, what do you do? And have them say, well, I'm an Anglican priest, and say, oh, and what do you believe? But I assume I know what he believes. I don't. Even the Anglicans don't. But But I would assume that I would, so I wouldn't ask the question. I'd understand it. See, that goes to show how far out in the world we actually are, doesn't it? It really does, because they don't know the first thing about us. Why not? We didn't tell them. We're still walking around with our consciousness wrapped in brown paper. Not everyone, not you. I'm talking about the other people. Right? Right. So, you know, we started integration with a real simple thing. It was really, really basic. We started integration with a circumstance that happened where we wanted to come together and we wanted to integrate. And at one particular point, maybe 2004, 2003, we ended up all the ministers in what's known as a minister's forum in the chapel. And we were all standing in there, sitting in the chapel, listening to the reports and stuff. And the report never came about what was happening with our integration with our brothers and sisters in United. So what happened was somebody put their hand up and they said, so what's happening, occurring there? And the answer was, not much. We're not really moving forward. There's nothing to report on. And someone, some wise minister from the back, said, well, why don't we treat? Why don't we pray? And so, you know, that's what we did, is that there are 400 and some of us in the chapel. And what we did was we did a treatment. We did a treatment for integration into the world in its completeness, for the reunification of this teaching in its completeness and its wholeness. And the moment that we did that treatment, what happened was things started to come together and started to work. And so a couple years later, I was invited by Dr. John to go to Kansas City and speak to all of the United ministers. And so I talked, and when I completed my talk, what I did was I invited Dr. Christian Sorensen to come up and treat with the United ministers for integration. And when he did that, what happened was it just sped up, started moving together all the way around. Do you think this teaching is the one that's going to take it and take it out to the world and create wholeness in the world?
Yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you believe enough in it to know that the tools and the philosophy of this teaching is the one that could do that in the world?
Yes.
Would you be willing to treat for it?
Yes.
Would you be willing to open your heart to it?
Yes.
Would you be willing to let go of what you're trying to sustain in order to manifest it?
Yes.
All right, so let's do the treatment. So join with me. First and foremost, let's allow that this is a safe place. Let's allow that nothing will hinder or stop or block that safety. So we rise above that which appears as fear. We let it just fall by the wayside. We let it go. We bring ourselves into the present moment where all the power of the universe exists. And we do so completely and absolutely right now by simply surrendering the past and what has brought us to this place. Any anxiety or any fear that we have that comes from the past, we surrender. And we move ourselves into a place where we can turn 180 degrees in mind and face forward to the future. And even that we surrender and let go so that we can be in the present moment. For in the present moment, without a past and without a future, what we have is the perfection of life. And there is no thing, nothing that needs to be done, changed, or transformed. Instead, we find ourselves in a position and in a place in our lives where there is no hunger. There is no lack. There is only the living entity, the living source, the living light of God itself. And it's from this place that I do my treatment, recognizing and knowing that there is God and absolutely nothing else. There is only the spiritual truth that moves throughout everything, this system that I call spirit. And I unify myself with it, knowing that it is infinite in its nature, and therefore I cannot be separate from that which is infinite. For it is not everything plus me, it is everything as me. So I put myself into this consciousness and into this idea completely and totally, and I speak my word for this teaching. I speak my word for this world. I speak my word for all. Recognizing and knowing that something has shifted, something has changed, something has moved, and the power within me moves within me and within you. dissolving and dissipating any idea of fear or less than, and bringing forward everything that is necessary to bring into fruition and reality the truth of a world that works for everyone. I recognize and know that my embarrassment is sustaining. I recognize and know that my shame is sustaining, that my fear is sustaining, and I surrender it by demanding that that power within me move and dissolve it, bringing forward into my experience and my life something different, and that difference is this. From this point forward, every person here follows a pathway unlike that which they followed before. They follow the light of truth in their own life, in their own expression, in their own experience, and for the world itself. I accept and I expect that this is so. And with an unconditional gratitude that it's already complete and already done, I simply surrender it back to that universal mind that is your mind, my mind, all mind, God mind. And I demand that it be my truth. And I live from it completely. My life has been changed at depth. From this moment forward, anything that I see as personal fear, I recognize it immediately and shift my consciousness instead to that which is truth, the truth of the teaching, the truth of my life, the truth of my calling. I surrender anything unlike that. And my higher power directs and awakens me in the process. This I accept. And graciously, with gratitude that it's already complete and so, I just open myself to it. And I turn this word back over to the universal mind, to the mind of God, to your mind and my mind. And I live from it. And together we anchor this by saying, and so it is. Thank you and bless you.